Hi, all you champions out there. This is Mike Lipkin. I'm the co-author of this fabulous book called You Belong Here. And I'm here together with my co-author, the remarkable Dr. Diane McIntosh. And today we're going to talk about a key chapter in this book. And the heading of this chapter is Recognize That Stress Attacks Us All, Even the Champions. Somehow we see certain individuals who seem blessed with the right instincts and the right skills, who seem to skate through life, but just below the surface or in a part that we cannot see, they are going through just as much, even more stress than we are going through. And yet somehow they find a way or they make a way. And so Diane, in January 2022, on her podcast, Blindsided, interviewed Kevin Love, a basketball player for the Miami Heat and a player who won the NBA championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, Kevin Love is one of the most prominent professional athletes to speak out about his struggle with mental illness. He wrote an article for the Players Tribune entitled, Everyone is Going Through Something, and it struck a chord and it helped a lot of people and athletes to open up. Now, Kevin Love described his anxiety as a low-level threat that something could go wrong at any time, and he said it clung to him at all times like a weighted vest. So, Diane, before we even talk about, you know, panic and that extreme stress moment, just talk to us a little bit about this kind of low-grade anxiety, or anxiety as a low-level threat that seems to hang around us even when we should feel safe, or even when things seem remarkably calm, especially in this post-COVID, or let's call it peri-pandemic age.
Well, anxiety is it's different than fear, usual fear. You don't have to learn to be afraid of a dog that's coming at you with its teeth bared and barking loudly. That automatic response is to be fearful and then to decide, do I run away or do I hide or what do I do in that circumstance? But your emotion is fear. Anxiety is different. And some people don't separate these, but for me, anxiety is inappropriate, unwarranted, excessive fear. Unlike fear that is of a known thing. I know that dog is coming at me and it's barking and his teeth are bared. It could bite me. I'm afraid. Or seeing a snake and thinking that snake could strangle me or bite me. Something dangerous could happen. Anxiety is about a fear that's unknown. It's vague. It's gnawing. And you don't know why it's present. Why is it still here? And often people who have chronic anxiety that actually becomes an anxiety disorder, like generalized anxiety disorder or panic disorder or social anxiety disorder, it starts with fear. It starts with inappropriate, excessive, unwanted fear, that sort of gnawing anxiety. People often have insight. What am I worried about? I know this is crazy. It's over the top. I'm too anxious about this, but they don't feel able to control it. And when that anxiety becomes really out of control, it can result in an anxiety disorder. It can result in panic attacks.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, as you're talking, Diane, someone once said to me that the difference between fear and anxiety is that fear is if you see a stick, if you're walking down a path and you think the stick is a snake, you should be afraid of it. That's called fear. Anxiety is when you think the stick is a snake, you realize it's a stick and you're still afraid of it.
Right.
Right. It's like, you know, it only makes sense to you. Now, look.
But Mike, to be fair, it doesn't make sense to most people who have anxiety. In fact, they will say, I know this is over the top. It's too much, but I can't control it. And right. The anxiety associated with different anxiety disorders, whether it's generalized anxiety or social anxiety or panic, it is different. But in all cases, people often will say, I know it's too much, but I'm afraid of this. So they don't have control over it.
Got it. So Kevin Love goes on to say that he thought he could just, and I love this phrase, Diane, achieve himself out of it. He used the anxiety as a fuel, but it also drained his energy as he struggled to continually maintain a facade of toughness and confidence. As he puts it, he just couldn't keep up with playing the character of Kevin Love. And while I'm not an NBA winning basketball player, I'm a motivational speaker. I'm the guy who's written 9 best-selling books. I get in front of literally thousands of people a year, and I'm expected to have the answers, and I've got to get into some kind of elevated state on the stage and be seen to be omniscient. And there are moments, Diane, just before I get up, where I have this sometimes more than a mild panic attack, because I realize I probably know less than the people I'm talking to, and yet I've got to play the role of the person who's all-knowing. And so to some extent, whoever you are and wherever you are, you're having to play a role in the work that you do, and you're having to assume a certain stance. What happens, Diane, if sometimes you feel like you just can't, like you just cannot keep up with playing the role called you?
Anxiety is exhausting. Being at that level of constant adrenaline, constant drive that is not, and you don't know why. Where is it coming from? Why do I feel this way all the time? I'm not in control of myself. That is exhausting. And so, you know, I've talked before when we've had these conversations about the essence of cognitive behavioral therapy is helping you to recognize you have those dysfunctional thoughts, and then you have to work to confront them. What is the evidence to support this? Right? But that's hard work. It's hard work identifying, recognizing, and then working to change the way you think and feel and behave. If you don't feel you have control over your thoughts and feelings and behaviors, that feels terrible and it is exhausting. And people can do this for some time, and depending on what else you've got going on in your life and how resilient you are and what skills you've learned over time, people can live and seem to be highly functional for a long time sometimes. But eventually, when you have chronic anxiety, it catches up with you. And I will say, and a lot of people out there who are listening to this are know exactly what I'm talking about. They know that they have chronic anxiety. And I can tell you for certain that if you manage this, if you get help, if you talk about it, if you bring this all out, it is better on the other side. It feels like you can't get out of it, but there's always a path ahead. But when you're in it and you're living that little lie of I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, it is absolutely exhausting and it impacts your ability to function fully.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, you know, then we get into his actual panic attack, and the way he described it is he said the intensity of the experience caused him to run off the court. He was playing a championship game. He ran off the court to the safety of the locker room. He recalls feeling so ashamed, he found it difficult to make eye contact with anyone. He also remembers feeling like he was choking, like there was a blockage in his windpipe. And like so many others experienced in the middle of a panic attack, he thought he was dying. But soon after, he was assessed at the Cleveland Clinic, and he learned he was fine, at least from a physical standpoint. And so the comment that he made, and I think it goes to what you've just said, he said this panic attack was so terrifying, he decided he would do anything to get better. So he began writing about it. He shared his experience. He got a professional treatment. And he now believes, and I'm interested in your comment on this, Diane, he now believes that people are tribal beings and that those who experience anxiety and depression must form a community to support each other. So, Diane, certainly post-COVID, with the magnitude of mental illness being significantly higher than it was pre-COVID, and so many people who never experienced mental illness now experiencing it. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of being a tribal being and how your community can help you through these terrifying moments.
Mike, you asked the most complex questions with a a prelude that I'm going, well, I want to talk about this, and I want to talk about that. So I'm just going to start here. Social support is the greatest protector of our mental health. Having your people around you. So we call, say, tribal beings, whether it's your family, your friends, your coworkers, wherever you get love, support, encouragement, that is a huge protector for your mental health. And as a matter of fact, the greatest protector of your mental health is having that social support around you. So he's absolutely right. I wanted to touch on his comments about the wanting to do anything because it was so terrifying to ever have another panic attack. That is part of the diagnosis, in fact, of a panic disorder, is that you change your behavior to try to avoid having another panic attack. Now, it speaks to the guy's resilience and functioning that he actually channeled that into going into treatment and talking about it and reinforcing his tribe, his community, his social support. But what happens to a lot of people, maybe because they don't have access or they're not sure what to do, they have a horrifying, terrifying panic attack. And the response, part of the diagnosis, doing anything they can to avoid ever having another one, is they stop doing things that might provoke another panic attack. And they spend all of their time trying to make sure that they never have another panic attack again because they're horrible. And he describes a absolutely textbook panic attack. And strangely, they're pretty much always textbook. It's just that there's kind of different iterations in that textbook. First of all, you can have physical symptoms or emotional symptoms. So physical things like you're shaking or your heart rate's increasing or just emotional. And what he talked about for emotional is so classic. It's, I'm having a heart attack. I'm having a stroke. I got to get out of here. It's unsafe. I'm going to die. I'm going crazy. Those are the most common ones. Heart attack, stroke. I'm going to die. I got to escape. I'm going crazy. Everybody reports that when they have a panic attack. It is just, those are the common things that people say. Some people have more physical symptoms. Some people have it all emotional symptoms. But so everyone's a little bit different, but that's the story. And as a result of having repeated uncued, which means unexpected panic attacks, where you're just sitting, eating chips, having no reason, and suddenly have a panic attack. Sometimes they can be cued, sometimes not cued. But then you have time afterwards where you do everything you can to avoid having another panic attack.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's fascinating that there can be uncued moments, but then he also says later on, he felt now that he had to go through it to grow through it. And I love that phrase. And I actually have embraced that as a mantra, go through it to grow through it. And then the other side of that, Diane, is you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. And, you know, for me, writing this book with you has been enlightening because oftentimes I'm in front of an audience, and I'll share with you, about 4 weeks ago, I was in front of an audience of about 200 folks, and I had an interchange with a leader in the audience, and it didn't go well. This person had a different point of view to me, and I could see that the whole room really was obviously siding with their colleague, and they initially resisted the point I was making, and I had a choice in that moment. And that choice was to capitulate to that moment and just apologize and hopefully limp through the rest of the session, or to go through it, to grow through it. And despite all the physical symptoms I experienced going through this panic of alienating this very important client, I just decided to double down on my stance to sustain the persona of Mike Lipkin. And what was very interesting, Diane, is I knew I had no choice once I'd made the choice. So you make the choice, you have no choice but to carry on. But my mouth went completely dry. And so while I was talking, I had a sip of water, but I thought, well, anyone would have a sip of water. That's not an overt expression of panic. And so what I knew through my work with you is that people couldn't see what was going on inside of me. The only thing that they could discern was how I was conducting myself. And you know what happened, Diane? Within a few minutes, that little interaction with a person in the audience became an incident at the beginning of the talk. And then as I started to pick up momentum, as I made points which resonated with the audience, more and more people bought into the message. And at the end of the message, I actually got acclaim for it having been a phenomenal session. So talk to us a little bit about that moment where you can either give in or you can go through it to grow through it. Another simple question.
Yes, I know. You always, lovely setup there. So it could be taken different ways. In your case, it provoked anxiety, as it always would in a circumstance where you're being confronted and your whole audience may not be behind you. And your decision was, I feel as a professional in this role, I feel very confident about my position here. I don't think you started, you know, yelling and saying, we're going to get our way through here. You decided, I'm putting my head down and I'm going to go through, live with this anxiety, know that it's going to be okay, that it's a moment in time, and continue to go through this program and try to continue to win these people over. That is an everyday decision that we make. Then there's the go through a anxiety disorder that's impacting all of your functioning and your ability to do all the things that you want to do in your life and having to work through with a therapist. And so there's different ways that we go through things and there's different levels of going through things. Every time you do what you did and every time you make a decision to go talk to someone and get some support and be, you know, open about your feelings and engage in therapy, that's also going through it to go through it. And there's different levels to that. But I think you bring another really important point is that when we're really anxious, when we miss our words, when our mouths go dry, when we're feeling worried in front of other people, and some people have it so bad, they actually have an anxiety disorder, social anxiety disorder. You think everyone else can see what's going on inside you. And they cannot. The only way that they know what's going on inside you is if you tell them. This is why you can't control another person, right? The only human being you can control is you, because you have no idea what's going on in anyone else's head. And so if you are someone who's tends to be anxious or thrown off course, practicing with someone, role playing with someone about if you get that tough question coming from the audience or whatever, what are the things that you can do personally to find your path through that? It feels like it lasts forever, but you know, once you decided I'm here and I'm in and I'm going to lean in and go through it to grow through it, then it was in the past. It was in the rearview mirror and you found your way forward.
Yeah. So look, what you just said reiterated something so important for me, and that is that once one goes through a extreme stress moment or a panic attack, you have that choice. And the choice is to lead a life where your mission is just to contain anxiety. So every time you see something that reminds you of the panic attack, you feel the fear, and the fear informs your action, and you get smaller and smaller as you retreat further and further away from the, let's call it the originating incident. Now, the opposite of that is instead of being fixated on the panic attack happening again, you focus on what you have a passion for, what you believe your purpose is, and your passion informs your action, which enables you to rise above your fear. And Diane, like, you know, many folks who lead a public life, and you and I are in a similar situation there, no matter how much I read, no matter how long I've been on this planet, I have an irrational fear of messing up in front of people, letting them down, getting expressions of disappointment, and then losing whatever prestige or kudos that I've spent years endeavoring to build. However, Diane, my passion for what I do, the mission to make a difference, the creating something like You Belong Here with someone like you, is so great that it's bigger than my fear. And so while I feel the fear, I also know nothing phenomenal, nothing extraordinary is going to come without the fear, without the anxiety, and sometimes even without the panic. So, Diane, talk to me, because I know you've got a huge passion for what you do. Talk to me about, can one purposefully expand one's passion in order to have one's passion be bigger than one's panic?
Not necessarily. If you have anxiety that comes with the territory and you build resilience and you learn some skills to help you find your way through it, have a sip of water, slow yourself down, manage that anxiety in the moment and find your way to the other side, which is exactly what happens with you. Absolutely. And, you know, that's why, you know, we both live to our passion. We found something that we're really passionate about. And so that encourages us to keep going and to keep learning and to keep exploring and to keep connecting and teaching and all the things we do.
Yeah.
The important difference between those two, though, Mike, is panic is different. If you're having true panic attacks where you go from zero to 100 in a matter of minutes, you could be in a panic for 10 minutes and then it slowly starts to come down the other side. That's horrible. And you're having physical symptoms. You think you're going to die. You think you're having a stroke. You may be sweating. You look distressed. That's different than having some anxiety. And when you have panic attacks, this is why it's so important what Kevin Love did. He decided that was so horrible. I don't want to do that again. I am getting help. You, who are, you know, have some mental strength and resilience and you've learned these skills, are able to get through anxiety. If you were having a full-on panic attack, it's difficult to continue on and get through that. And so I want to make that difference and that separation, because it's not enough to, you know, a little kick in the butt and you can keep going. A panic attack is an awful thing and it means you need some help. Little caveat, you can have a panic attack without having panic disorder. People can panic, but it's not the same as having a high level of anxiety in a certain event.
Right. So there's the spectrum between, let's call it, mild concern and outright panic.
Panic.
So just in the last couple of minutes here, Diane, let's talk through some ways to deal with extreme stress. And you talk about prepare for it, or better yet, prepare not to panic by knowing your anxiety triggers and your early panic symptoms. Talk to us about that.
Well, part of the disorder, as I said, is avoiding situations so you don't have another panic attack. So if you have panic disorder, that can be very dysfunctional. But when you start to get better from panic attacks, or if you have anxiety in certain circumstances, knowing what your triggers are, what I call a pre-panic, that's how I talk to my patients, where you think, oh, this could turn into a panic attack. What are the skills that are necessary? How do I grab onto those skills and start using them when I have that experience? And it might be just that you feel a little bit by that little flutter that reminds you, maybe I'm just going to sit down for a moment, take a minute to breathe. That all takes, if you have panic disorder, it takes skills to learn. It takes time to learn that. But if you know I have a propensity to panic or I have a high level of anxiety in this circumstance, it's all about being prepared and knowing what those little triggers are or those sensations and listening to your own body.
So good. So good. And then, you know, we talk about using positive self-talk. And so when I'm going through an extreme stress moment, I just say, I'm having an extreme stress moment. And then the four most important words for me, this too shall pass. And then what I now say, Diane, if I'm in front of a group and I know that this is something that I can deal with, I say, I'm built for this. So yes, I'm going through it, but I'm built for this. Then we talk about oxygenate. So Diane, talk to us about breathing evenly, but not too deeply.
You know how people always say, you know, if someone's hyperventilating, and they say, just slow down, take slow, deep breaths, and then the person passes out. So you don't want to hold your breath, because you can't panic if you're breathing. But people, when they're panicking, hold their breath and they don't even realize it. So that's why people say breathe, but even breaths, not holding your breath, because then you're not breathing. So the slow, even breaths, don't hold your breath and just continue to breathe, and that will help you get through it. You won't panic if you're actually breathing, because it comes from holding your breath and then you're into a full-grown panic.
So good. And then by the same token, Diane, how does hydrating help you?
Well, I think that just slowing yourself down, having a glass of water, because you have to breathe when you're getting yourself organized in that way. So just that's something that most people, if they're very agitated and they're hyperventilating, can't breathe. So getting yourself, or can't drink. So getting yourself slowed down, have a drink, take even slow breaths, take a second to just try to calm your mind. Now, if you're having a full-blown panic, I'm not saying just sit down and stop having a panic. That's not fair, and that's kind of cruel to say that. But if you're being anxious, you know my anxiety is starting to escalate, you have those pre-panic feelings, doing things that help to calm your mind as quickly as you can.
Right, so good. And so, for those of you who are interested, we outline another 8 steps to making your way through the panic attack. But ultimately, this is about, as you say, Diane, owning your brain. And so, very importantly, when you're going through the spectrum of a panic attack, whether it's mild or whether it's extreme, don't make far-reaching decisions. And so, Diane, help us wrap this up with one final insight in terms of how do we either insulate ourselves against anxiety or how do we maximize our sense of control in these extraordinarily volatile times?
Well, I think
Another
what you,
mild question just to wrap up.
yes, I know. I think what you said earlier is actually a really good point. And it's what I say if I'm feeling really anxious or worried about something, just starting to say to myself, you know, this feels crappy right now, but it does pass, and it always does. And as soon as I actually say that to myself, if I give myself self-compassion, I'm compassionate, and I say, this always passes, immediately it starts to come up the other side. It starts to calm itself down. And I think the last point, the other point that you made just on the wrap up is when you're in the midst of a crisis, this is not a time to make big decisions. You don't get divorced. You don't decide to have a baby. You don't sell your house. When you're really struggling is not the time to make these big life-changing decisions. The same thing when you're just in the moment with a lot of anxiety, allowing yourself to slow down before you make the big decision is so important, because then you're more likely to own your brain, you own your decisions.
So good. Thank you very much, Diane. Thank you to everyone who's watched or listened to us, and stay tuned for the next exciting podcast.
Exciting. Thanks.